You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
Yeah! What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, May 15th, 2024. And I'm your old pal, Joey O'Brien.
And I'm Troy, ready for a hot fod, LaValley.
Oh, is it going to be a hot fod, good buddy? This is what I call a working fod.
Yeah.
Working fod, because there's fods that are reminiscent of the days where we would just banter back and forth about the sesh. Mm-hmm. You know, or talking about what happened and like breaking it down and going into rules and stuff like that. We would do that off air. It was fun.
Yeah.
Then there are FODs where you're just like, oh my God. Like the amount of work and thought that's going to have to go into this is brutal. It's brutal.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, this goes from the episode all the way to the news to the We Are Stupid. I mean, there is so much to cover here today. There's so much going on in the network out of nowhere. And then there's so much that we have to talk about with this week's episode because holy shit, buddy. That was an ep.
Yeah,
that
man.
Was an ep.
Dude, I'm psyched that we didn't even like have a pre-production meeting about this. Like, I was going to let you just drive the ship when we logged on today. I didn't know if you were going to be like, let's talk before we go live. I really just wanted to go live, and we did. We barely talked, and I think that's better. You're going to get a real, honest, immediate response to this because we haven't chatted at all since the ep dropped.
Yep, we have not. We haven't really chatted since the ep recorded. It didn't record that long ago. Well, I'm saying in terms of, we haven't talked about the episode.
It's crazy. So, yeah. We recorded it a week ago because we're running up against like calendar issues with vacations and just timing and whatnot. So mm-hmm. We recorded that last Monday. It was mixed, edited, and everything debuted on Thursday. And we're back in the studio tomorrow, but we're doing fodder 3 days after it's been released and only a week after it's been recorded. So it's crazy. It's crazy to even talk
is.
About this. Yeah,
it's crazy. We have not had a chance to talk about it. Yeah, no pre-production meetings here. All I do is sit here kind of tweaking the tech a little bit while listening to Troy make weird, weird guttural sounds.
Yeah.
His body just makes terrible sounds right before he goes live.
I do it just to get a laugh out of you. I pretend I'm throwing up. I like to do that one. I always get you. Just like to make you loosen you up a little bit with some body humor.
Well, like I said, let's get into it because this is going to be a chunk-tacular FOD. We will get into a bunch of news, including a whole bunch of shows coming up that you can come to and see us at and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We'll go into all those. Then we're going to devote most of this to Glass Cannon Podcast Campaign 2, Episode 34.
Boom.
We're really going to dive into that ep, including a long, extended We Are Stupid. There's lots to address there. And then... we're going to make time for listener mail. Don't you worry. We're going to make time for listener mail. So we'll get to that as well.
I wasn't worried.
Let's kick it off with the news. So I want to start, to me, top of mind is these gauntlets you mentioned last week. Gauntlets that are coming to Gen Con 2024 in the GCN booth, where people can come and take classic GCN characters up against a challenge of a one-hour-ish encounter with a Glass Cannon GM to run them through it. You teased it last week, but now people can buy these things, right? Record scratch. How ridiculous did that sound? Ladies and gentlemen, this is a first. Is this a fodder pickup?
A pickup Zony?
A pickup Zony. So weird. I'm in my house. Troy's in his house. I'm like...
Not right now.
Not right now. I've remodeled my home. No.
It's been a long day.
I'm in my house and I'm like, all right, let's get into it. My favorite thing I'm so excited about to talk about, the gauntlets. And then we go on and talk about some news that we pre-recorded about the gauntlets, but things have changed. And so we need to do a quick FOD pickup with updated information. And then we're going to get you right back to your regularly scheduled FOD with the rest of the news because all of the rest still stands. The gauntlets, which I'm so excited about, happening at the Gen Con booth this year in our own, in the GCN booth, where you can get a chance to make a reservation, come in, hang out, and play with a Glass Cannon Network GM for 1 hour to run through, you're calling them a gauntlet.
The gauntlet.
Because it's going to be pretty tough using Glass Cannon Network classic, iconic characters. These went on sale on our website on Monday, but then we hit a little snafu. So that's why we wanted to do a little pickup record here to get you up to speed on what you can do to join into this and how you got to follow the rest of the news. Troy.
It's funny, we recorded Fodder early this week because we were in the studio all day today recording Glass Cannon. Had an amazing, we just wrapped up an amazing day of recording, and now we got to do this little pickup. Basically, long story short, well, let's talk about what the gauntlets are. You mentioned it. You're going to play iconic Pathfinder characters from the Glass Cannon pantheon of characters.
Converted to 2E.
Converted to 2E.
We're just going to play it in 2E. But yeah, it's going to be characters all the way back to the OG through multiple different shows, converted to 2E that you can put together in your own little weird parties to take on these encounters.
Right. And if you purchase these slots, you get to pick your character when you sit down. So you, I imagine there's going to be tables with like Colonel Luther and Lork and Gavrik's Heart and, you know, Mrs. O'Lady, you know, taking on some encounter meant to really test the limits of these characters. There's going to be second level gauntlets and there's going to be sixth level gauntlets. And it's going to be happening all Gen Con weekend long. Instead of doing the recording booth this year, we're doing these experiential activations to, you know, get to connect with the fans a little bit more. And also to help, you know, recoup the cost of the booth because it is expensive to have a booth at Gen Con. And so we had everything set up on our website for sales and we just hit a little snag. Luckily, we're amazing friends with the people at Gen Con. We talked with them and they were like, just put it through our system instead of doing it on your website. Just because if everybody did that, it becomes like the Wild West.
The Wild West.
We totally understand.
Yeah, totally understand. However, this is not like a Gen Con event typically is done. It's just going to, I mean, it's going to appear that way to you guys, but the way that they operate it, it's different because this is a contracted space, which is a, you know, we can get into the nitty gritty of the legal terms of it, but basically we have this space. So it's not like a Gen Con space where we're doing a show and you have to pay a fee to Gen Con to buy those tickets. That's not the case. Like this is totally going to support us and to help us, you know, pay for this booth, but we're very excited at the idea of having you guys there. And we just, you know, we can't do it through our website directly. So if you're hearing this news and you bought through the website directly, you have nothing to worry about. We'll reach out to you. We're going to take care of it. But if you haven't yet purchased a ticket to one of these things, you can do so very soon through the Gen Con portal.
This Sunday, everything goes on sale for Gen Con. So our Get in the Trunk live show, our Blades in the Dark, Starfinder 2E, the Call of Cthulhu show happening at the con, which I just finished casting, all those will go on sale along with every single one of these gauntlets. And still, Gen Con doesn't take a cut of the gauntlets that all goes to us and supporting this booth. So everything worked out for the best. You can buy those. Like Joe said, if you already purchased them, we'll reach out to you, let you know how that works. But there's going to be tables happening every hour on the hour with some breaks in between run by me, Joe, Skid, Matthew, and Jared Logan. So you can sign up for any of these tables. You're like, you know, I'll do a little Joe on Saturday and then come back and do Skid on Sunday. Sprinkle a little Troy. I mean, you can really mix and
match. Second level one day, sixth level the next day.
Right. Yeah. It's not for everybody. This is like everything we do. This is a luxury item, but we think it's going to be really fun. We're going to be doing it at the Nashville retreat all weekend long for the people that bought tickets to the retreat. And we want them to bring them into the booth as well.
Gauntlet preseason.
Right.
As we all warm up. Like, how do these encounters work? Are they really hard enough? The retreat's going to be the tester. And then we're really going to take it out for a spin at Gen Con. And we hope that, you know, you can join us there and help us do it there.
And a sweet little swag bag, too.
And a sweet little swag bag. We're going to get you back to our FOD now, but that we had pre-recorded. And that has a lot more info about all the shows, other shows that we're doing at Gen Con. So Troy teased them here, but we're going to go into detail about them right now in a second. Back to your previously recorded FOD. Coming up, not on sale yet, but coming. Be aware, the Gen Con shows are about to go on sale, like the in-convention shows.
This is the week,
It's Sunday, right? It's
Sunday,
the 19th?
The 19th. I think it's noon Eastern. We're going to put them up on our website as well. And then, of course, we'll have it all over social media. But the tickets to Get in the Trunk Live, Call of Cthulhu Live at the con, the day show, the 1920s Call of Cthulhu, Starfinder 2nd Edition Live, and Blades in the Dark, the Busted Mufflers, along with Jared Logan's doing another comedy show. All those tickets will go on sale this Sunday. And I mean, if it's anything like last year, they will sell quickly, which makes me feel like I should lock down those casts this week and announce the cast before the tickets go out. Maybe.
Probably.
Maybe not. We'll see. I got a lot to do this week.
I mean, yeah, the shows are going up for sale, but I mean, you don't really need a cast in the building for 4 months.
Dude, the fucking Call of Cthulhu at the Athenaeum show. I said it last week. We've already sold more tickets than we sold last year, which is amazing. We're still 3 months out. And I haven't announced the cast for that. And I know the cast for that. I just haven't announced it. And when I do, there will be no tickets left. So yet again, buy those. But I mean, the stuff that I'm brewing, the combinations of network personalities that I'm putting together for these four shows at the con, it's going to be unlike anything. You're going to hate it because it's a lot of players, but I really want to give everybody a chance to showcase and get out there.
All I want is shows off. Do I get any shows off?
I gave you some time off.
Excellent.
More time off than you've ever had. You might even be able to get yourself a taco.
I'll tell you what I don't want off. Blades in the Dark. You cannot take me off of Busted Muffs, man.
All right, you're in for Blades in the Dark. You heard it here first. Joe O'Brien.
Dude, the one time a year I get to play Blades in the Dark. I love that game so much.
Who's your character?
Play it once a year.
You have two characters.
I'll probably bring a new one. Yeah, I've got a couple that I rotate through, but you know, they never last that long. So I have that like spy slide. I have that slide guy. I can't remember his name at the moment, but yeah, he's like Face from the A-Team. He can kind of like be anybody.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll be Genius Loci.
Genius Loci.
AKA Blueprint.
Blueprint.
It's been so long.
That's right.
We only play them once a year. It just seems so silly at this point. But we had a burner last year. And if you didn't get to see it, like, it's not recorded. I don't know if it will be this year, but like that show we did last year was so absurd. I mean, Skid and Sydney were on the other end of the table playing a completely different game from us because we couldn't hear them because there were no monitors. I mean, the show was so absolutely insane, and it had one of the best endings that we've ever had.
It had lost
to time.
It did. It had one of the best endings ever. That was a wild show. Anyway, got so much to get to. I'm going to find this character. I know I have this character sheet on my computer, so I'm going to find it now. While you tell everybody, this is wild.
What am I telling them?
But we're going back to Stand Up New York and doing another show. This time, it's Kong.
It's Kong, Skull Island. It's so
tell
funny.
Tell the people what to expect.
I haven't seen Kong, Skull Island, but you just watched it recently. So I've got to watch it to research and get in the zone. But I think you've told me enough now that I'm like, oh, okay. I know. I get it. I know how to run this adventure.
Yeah, totally.
But just a little side story. The other day, I don't know if this happens in your house, but the remotes are always missing because the children just like hide. They're gone. And so my wife's like, Try, get out of it. I'm like, what? She's like, there's something very inappropriate on the TV and I can't find the remotes. I'm like, oh God. And it's just Dash is sitting there watching like violent. And I look and it's Kong Skull Island. Anyways, I'm like, oh God, people are getting killed.
That's amazing.
I think it was on TBS, so I'm sure it was a little edited. But anyways, yeah, we're going to be at Stand Up New York. And if you saw us last time doing the Rambo one, that was at the old Stand Up New York on the Upper West Side, which has been there since well before I even moved to New York. I used to walk by that all the time when I was going to Columbia. Anyways, this is going to be at the brand new Stand Up New York, which is in Midtown Times Square. And it's on May 31st. I think it's going to be an 8:30 PM show.
Yeah, 8 o'clock doors, 8:30. The show starts. It's in the bottom of the Edison Hotel on 46th Street in Manhattan.
It's like the history.
Old school Manhattan hotel. And it has the scene now where it's going to take place has a very, I want to say like a Great Gatsby-ish kind of vibe. Like it's got that old school restaurant, New York restaurant feel. It is kind of somewhat like
you just went to do a site visit.
Yeah.
Right?
I went to do a site visit. Yeah. It's kind of like loosely, maybe a little bit Caribbean themed kind of, but not really. You know what I mean? It definitely has that like, yeah, Copacabana kind of feel. And so it's going to be a really, really fun and you know, different place to play for us. And it's so intimate. It's really small. So, you know, you're just kind of in this one room with these people that, you know, anybody that comes to see it, they're going to just be right there. It's great.
Yeah, different place and a different feel for a show and with a different cast. You know, it's me, you, and Skid. So it's got that glass cannon heart and soul. But then you've got Khalees Hawkins and Natalie Cuomo, who are like their first role-playing game was when they played with us last time. This will be their second session. And I mean, they were fantastic because they bring such a new and different comedy energy to it. But it wasn't long, like most people who play RPGs for the first time, where they were just leaning into it and having a blast. And so I'm excited to see what they do with Kong Island. You guys did a... like a character creation session. You were telling me some of their character concepts. It's going to be pretty wild. So if you're in New York, in the tri-state area, or you want to just take a trip to New York, it's beautiful right now. Come on out and see this. It's going to be a trip.
Yeah, that's a great time to visit New York. May 31st. Really, it doesn't get better. A couple weeks after that, it's a nightmare in this city.
It's so disgusting, so
thick and wet and hot all the time. Yeah. So yeah, May 31st, come and join. And by the way, his name is Justice Lemieux. Alias Muse.
Muse. That was your first muffler guy?
No, my first muffler was Wraith. He was the ghost fighter. Yeah. This is Muse, the spy, basically.
Yeah.
And he is, based on my character sheet, stressed. He is very stressed.
I'm not going to announce too much casting or any casting right now, but one thing I will say, locked in and loaded for Gen Con this year, a guy by the name of Ross Bryant.
What?
So, Ross Bryant.
I knew
Bryant,
he was like on the fence, but I was like, are the tickets actually being purchased? Like, he's locked.
Yeah, Ross Bryant is about to get about 6 texts from me today. I'm going to keep old Ross busy. His trip is going to be painful. The amount of work I'm about to give Ross.
Oh, that's so funny. He's going to be like, I thought I was going to see Gen Con. But instead, I fell under the Troy LaValle thing of working every second, so you don't enjoy a minute of the con. Oh, anyway, lots of shows coming up, really fun stuff. Speaking of really fun shows, did we just, am I crazy or I didn't know this, I wasn't privy to this. Did we stream last night the Kansas City live show? Did that get streamed?
That's
available now. If you wanted to watch Strange Aeons, our Kansas City show, it's available on the Twitch VOD, and you could listen to it, I assume, right?
It'll be on, I'm sure by the time they're watching this, it's on YouTube. It's going to be streamed on YouTube, so it stays on YouTube. Yeah, like, it's premieres on
YouTube. So it's not on Twitch.
It's a YouTube premiere, not Twitch.
It's a YouTube premiere, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is something we're doing this year with the live shows, is like, instead of just drop them on YouTube, watch whenever you want, we do that premiere watch party at 8 p.m. Eastern, and then it just lives there as a video. And so Twitch is more focused now on live stuff, like you and I playing video games, how I miss that, hopefully some more Strange Aeons live.
Is Austin going to go up on the YouTube premiere
Austin
next week?
Austin is ready, so it's probably going to go up next Tuesday on
the 21st.
YouTube premiere, yeah. Okay. We're just sending a couple more notes to Harry to clean up a couple things. And then, I could have released them both this week, honestly, but we got so much going on.
Dude, it's just wild. I want to get to this episode.
Time for chaos, man.
Couple more items real quick. First, next week, after the FOD next week, the day the FOD drops, we're on a flight to Canada, back to Canada. We're going to Vancouver this time. Very excited for that show. I wanted to make you guys aware, because it's a little different, that our domestic shows have gotten into a rhythm where we have a great merch team. We have fantastic merch volunteers that are very consistent and join us from show to show. Then we love working with. They get a free bump up to VIP, and they hang with everybody at the show and all that kind of stuff. I don't think that same rhythm is not in Canada yet, and nobody really knows about this. So if you're going to the Vancouver show and have GA tickets, we're still looking for volunteers for merch. So be aware, you could email us at contact@glasscannonnetwork.com and say that you want to volunteer to be on the merch team, and you could get bumped up to VIP. Or if you're already VIP and you just want to hang out with the merch team and come early to the show and everything, you can do that. There's a couple spots available. So McDermott just hit me up with that right before we went live. He was like, yo, let people know we got a couple spots for merch team if they want to join. So,
Sweet. Yeah. And there's like 20 VIPs left at the time of this recording. You know, the Canadian things got filed up with the prices. I won't blame anybody, but it wasn't you or I. And the prices are more expensive because of the Canadian conversion. And so the VIP prices went up. So there's like 20 more sitting there. It's now a luxury item. But if you want to come out, the VIP this year, now that it's happening before the show, it's been really, really wonderful. You get a lot more. Everybody's a lot fresher, including us, to talk to. It ends up, I don't know about you, I feel like, not that I need this, but I feel like even more inspired after talking to everybody and hearing.
You feel like you get to know the people you're playing for in the moment.
Yeah, and
you
we're have calling these them stories out the
you
show.
Can call yeah. out during the show. It's just so much better, in my opinion. Yeah.
It's really, really wonderful, and we carry that energy into the show. So if you can afford it, or if you, you know, if you got a birthday coming up, ask your loved ones to hook you up with a VIP ticket for this. But there's only like 30-something tickets total left to the show. 20 of those are VIPs. We would love to sell this out. It'll help us be able to, you know, plan for Canada next year or the year after. So if you're around Thursday night, come on. Canadians don't work. You can take Friday off from your job at Tim Hortons.
Yeah, come out and play with us. It's going to be awesome. And then let's just talk about live streams real quick. Today, yeah. I'm going to continue my little run of Control. That's been really fun. Made a lot of progress last week. We had so much fun on the stream. And I'll get to that in a second. I'm going to do another stream because I managed to book Paula, Mary Lou, and Sydney again for another Helldivers 2 run this Friday. So on Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern time, live on Twitch, the squad's getting back together, and we're Helldiving in for some more Helldivers. We have so much fun with that game. And come by and check us out on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 o'clock Pacific. It's going to be a little happy hour, John, for at least Sydney and I. Should be really fun. So come by and check that out. I asked my wife what she wanted for Mother's Day. Like, what do you want for Mother's Day? Mm-hmm. And she's like, there's one thing that I really, really want. And it's not going to cost you anything, but time. I'm like, whatever, anything for you. She's like, we need to clean out the attic. And I was like, God damn it. Like, you're right. I know this has to happen. And you know what? You're correct. Like, that's it. That's your wish. Your wish is my command. So all day yesterday, just cleaning out the attic. Wow. And I found so much shit that I'm doing two streams this week. I'm going to give away a ton of shit. I found so much.
Really?
Well, like old modules and shit and like Pathfinder books and Starfinder maps and stuff. I'm like, guys, you should benefit from this. This is not doing any good in my attic. So, we're going to have some fun giveaways this week too. So keep an eye out for that. All right.
Nice, nice.
Let's get into Glass Cannon Podcast episode 34. This, I don't want to say I've been dreading it. It's a lot. It's a lot to wrap your head around because there's a lot of moving parts here. I don't really have a way in here, except I just wanted to talk about, well, the first thing I was going to do, I'll let you know,
is
talk about what I consider to be the major problems that are going on that in hindsight, you can kind of see how they developed. I could start there, or I could let you do the opening statement of this episode. I don't know how you want to approach it.
Yeah, it's complicated. Like, in terms of engagement after the episode, it's through the roof. And that's always wonderful to see people on both sides of the aisle debating what they liked and what they didn't like about it. You know, that's all really good. You see it on YouTube, you see it on the Discord, you see it on the subreddit. I imagine there are other places that talk about these episodes. That engagement, people would kill for that type of engagement. You know, what, you got to be concerned about, or even, you know, it's an interesting thing to be aware of is there's a lot of people that are just like, they're not into it. You know what I mean? They're not into a combination of things. The brutality of these encounters, the sort of, I want to phrase this carefully, the sort of level of the collective level of ability at the table, both for not just knowledge of the game, because I think our knowledge of the game has deepened, but the understanding of how this game is different from Pathfinder First Edition, D&D, and any other RPGs. You know, it's something that we've had to learn over time. Like, you cannot play this the way you play other games. And that sort of collective understanding of that is still, it's some timey. And also, I think that the Gatewalker's story, there's some people it's just not resonating with. It's a different story than Giant Slayer, for example, in which these people are going on to, they're like, very clearly we're on a mission to save the world. This, in the same way, there's something happened, and like, they very well may be stopping a threat that can destroy the world, but we're 35 episodes in, you still don't really know what those things are. And while that was still true in Giant Slayer, there were immediate enemies that had like a, there was a point, like you were going, you don't know how.
It was a clear goal.
Right. You first, you find out about Screed, you go to take care of Screed. Then after Screed, you're like, Grenseldeck? We got to go deal with Grenseldeck. You don't know what's going on with the Stormtide or anything like that, but you had a clear goal. Infiltrate the fort and take out this Grenseldeck, find out what she's up to. Once that happens, then you find out about the Stormtimer and then the story really unfolds. You got to get to Minderhall's Valley. You got to do that. With this, it's very, very
and
different.
And Grenseldeck is that 70 episodes in?
Oh, yeah.
So
married to the Saab?
Right. 69 so, and 70. So it has nothing to do with like, oh, you needed to know the larger threat earlier. Like that's not it. It's, yeah, there's a lack of clarity of kind of what, you know, who are the immediate people that caused our problem, the character's problem in the plot. We still don't know at all. Right.
You know, and the inciting event happened off screen. With the missing moment, and because of that, you know, you guys, the problem is very insular. You know what I mean? Like for these characters, their need to know, I think is clear. They want to know what happened to them. If that happened to anybody, you'd want to figure out. They've joined a cause, this consortium of EPOPs to try and figure this out. How that's affecting the rest of the world isn't super clear yet because it all kind of happened before, and now you're in Seven Arches, and people talk about the missing moment. I mean, even Kanipo, you know, it seems like their interest in you is because you possessed something that happened to you from going through that gate. So it's obviously important, but now you've been transported to a jungle and you're fighting these creatures. So it's still like when you add up all these things, I can see why this is not resonating with a lot of people, but like where to begin to address all that is really, really tricky. What I will say is I'm not adjusting these encounters at all as of late. I think that if I were to play, I think there's this conception or misconception really that like I'm out to kill the characters or making these encounters so much harder, and it's really not the truth. I couldn't be softer. I'm coming out of the gate and I roll the dice, I add up the numbers, and I tell you those numbers. As of late, that means I'm always going first and I'm always hitting and I'm almost always critting. If I was trying to maybe tell a better story, I would lie about those numbers. Oh, the snail missed. Oh, I rolled a natural one on the initiative. That's just not how I play the game. I like to just roll the dice. So much going on, like just doing having the math take care of itself for me makes it just more fun to play. That's why I play for the random chance of things. I like the number to be exact. You know, I remember you back in the day would like roll and be like, oh, I know that 11's not a hit. I'm not even going to miss. You know what I mean? Like I will sit there and be like, 11 minus 2 for that. Like I have to know the exact number. That's my personality. But because of that, it makes the game a lot easier for me because I don't have to fudge. I just do that. I could fudge, but like I don't want to. I could also give out bottle caps, but I don't want to. Since the beginning of playing this game with the playtest, when Mona and Bullman came to New York and ran a session for us in our old studio to kind of give us the first look at the playtest. I was like, I love this. I hate the bottle caps. To me, there is nothing more anticlimactic than just being able to take away death with a bottle cap. And while the bottle cap has other functions, that's kind of how it functions. And that's just one thing that I didn't like about the game. I understand that their importance, especially the more we've played it. I understand how it's not just an accessory to the game, how it's really important because of how deadly this is and how people go up and down. I just don't like it. And it's so funny because it feels like a Deus Ex Machina. I understand these are heroes. They're hero points, but to me, it seems so Deus Ex Machina, which is something that people rebel against. Everyone else in this space, they do this 5, 6, 7 years. Characters never die. It's because people have plot armor and they're fudging dice and they're lying. That's not the way we play. And I think that's a hallmark of how we do things. Like I rolled the dice. I tell you, someone dies. Tough shit. That's we're playing the real game. I can give you a different game. There's plenty of that out there. Go listen. But you know, people die.
Well, let me bring up Edward Sanchez's comment on the YouTube video. Yeah. I love the GCN. I don't love how under-equipped or under-leveled and OP this campaign is. It's starting to not be enjoyable because I'm finding myself avoiding getting attached to anyone in the event that they die, which has already happened once. And I feel like it could happen in just any random encounter. I'm not putting the entire blame on Troy or just bad roles. I'm finding 2E to be unbalanced and frustrating. Not sure what can be done, but entertainment value has been replaced by bitching and complaining about all the things they couldn't do, didn't do, weren't allowed to do, or weren't ready or equipped for. That's a really good analysis, I think, in general, and a good opinion. So thanks for laying it out there like that. But yeah, it's the problem, the system.
No, I don't think so. But like, I also don't feel comfortable just blaming us or just blaming you guys. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the problem is the system.
Well, let me lay out a couple of my problems, okay? So this everything you've talked about so far has very little to do with this encounter. It's you're talking about the campaign as a whole. You're talking about the feel of everything as a whole and the game as a whole.
Because I think they all contribute to sort of the zeitgeist of how people feel about campaign two.
Well,
which is both positive and negative.
Yeah, I think, look, admittedly, I have a limited understanding of everyone's opinions on this matter.
Sure.
Gatewalkers is going to have a lot more back and forth than something like Blood of the Wild. But Blood of the Wild seems, people love Blood of the Wild. And if they don't like Blood of the Wild, it's because they don't like us that much. You know what I mean? Like, they don't like the party that much or whatever. It's certainly not because they don't like the game. Or the way the game is played, you know, in my opinion. So, and that is 2E, and hero points abound in that game. Bottle caps abound in that game, and they are used constantly to keep people alive and to adjust certain roles or whatever. And it makes everyone happy because we all love these characters and you want them to endure. However, there have been death rolls with no bottle caps left. It's happened. Like, you have felt on the precipice, you know, but it hasn't come through yet. My question, I guess, is just it's this encounter, this particular session has been a catalyst to bring all this shit out, to clean out the shed, right? Talk about all this stuff. But I think it's reasonable to look at this as a perfect storm of events that if each thing does not line up in a certain way, you don't have anywhere near as deadly of an encounter as you have right now. Now, some of those things they're mistakes. Some of them are kind of small mistakes that, you know, we could talk about and we are stupid. But some of them are things such as Brother Ramius leading the way out. You know, like, I don't make that decision, maybe that doesn't happen. Also, it could be every single character just sort of like doop a doop a doop a doop a doop hustling across those rocks without really looking at anything, obsessively looking at the water for creatures, obsessively asking for perception checks. Because if this creature emerges with just Asta on the first rock and the rest of us back on shore,
totally like, different.
It's an entirely different encounter, nowhere near as deadly.
I wonder how much of that is you guys not metagaming to think about, like, the performance. We're doing a show.
That's 100% what it is. That's what is I was it? Thinking is Brother Ramius.
I wonder what the percentage is, because I don't know if it's 100%. I think it's a certain percentage, maybe the larger percentage of that, and the other percentage just being like, la la la, that's how we play.
Most people around that table, most of the time, they're thinking about doing a show and they want to keep it moving. And if they're going to like dilly dally or go off and have a lunch with that annoying guy in Thinlands Farms, you know, that's because they think it's going to lead to some comedy or something. I'm not saying stay on plot because it's a show,
but I'm saying we
get to certain areas and, you know, I do feel like if somebody felt threatened, they would have called for a check or whatever. But this encounter is so different if we do not put ourselves into such exposed danger, like right out of the gate, because it was because of the placement of everything that we just couldn't do anything. There was nothing that we could do. And of course, in retrospect, you know, having one person, for example, go all the way across before anybody else went would have been totally reasonable. You know, but it's just not something that we did. One person falls in the water, starts, you know, hurtling downstream. You've got three different people that could go over there, throw a rope or do whatever, you know, pull them over to the other side while the somebody else is dealing with the snail from range. Like, there's a lot of ways, you know, in retrospect that, it could have been handled. But that's why, like, I don't necessarily want to throw 2E under the bus right now. Because I don't
think that would be too easy. I really, I said, I don't want to blame us. But I think there is a disconnect between how the game is intended to be played and how we're playing it. And that's when you combine that with a perfect storm where the GM is rolling well and the players are eating shit, this is what happens.
Sure. You know? There's another layer to this, which is I'm happy to blame us. We do not play well together in terms of synergizing and always doing the best possible tactical move in every round. Like, it's just not something that we do. And part of the reason for that is a lack of understanding of the game and the rules and doing the work to understand that. That's part of it. But another part of it is in order to really excel in that area, you would have to play a game that would be, unless it was all intuitive, it would be a complete snore to listen to and very, very distracting because you would have to communicate in pure tactics with everyone at all times and not just do what your character does in the narrative in the moment without thinking about military strategy, you know, and how many spaces you are from X, Y, or Z. You have the freedom to do that kind of stuff when you're around a table with people that like that. But when you're around a table with people that really don't like it when you say, you know, you could just use that action to move within 30 feet and then do this, and then so-and-so can come over here, and then you ready till you're flanking, then he steps up, now you're flanking, take that swing, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you'd spend the whole time just talking about it like it's a chess match, and that also gets a little bit boring. That's not as ideal either.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit... we're not good enough, but I think it's a little unreasonable to think that the five of us will work in tandem in every combat without talking in pure mechanics to each other every round of everybody's turn. It would get really boring. Like, you can do that in Baldur's Gate 3 because you're controlling all the characters. You can see what you're going to do with everything.
Right.
It's just not like that here. It's supposed to emulate the hecticness of actual combat, where you do not get that opportunity to just like talk about each what person's ability has not been used up yet for the day that you didn't realize they have this ability or whatever. So it's not quite that either. It's just that we got into a bad situation and could not get out of it once it started. Chill commented and said, "So this is where we want to separate out 2E." from Gatewalkers. @Chill07 on YouTube said, this encounter is just stunningly crazy at this level. And then the die roll situation turned it into a disaster. I've experienced campaigns that just folded in situations this dire.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I can hear that. And I felt the exact same way. Like, we don't feel that way in Blood of the Wild. Like, even with hero points, stuff like that. Like, there are encounters. There's some that you're like, wow, this is like, because I just look at it in numbers. I think of what is my to hit and what is there to hit. If they're somewhat comparable, then there should be that amount of enemies-ish, right? Comparable. Mm-hmm. If your to hit is even one more than mine, that's like a whole level higher. If your to hit is two more than mine, that is two levels higher. This snail's to hit, I'm guessing, based on the numbers that you're rolling, is somewhere between 4 to 5 points higher than my two hit, which, by the way, is as high as it can be in this party. It's the same height as the highest person in this party.
Right.
So when your AC and your two hit is 5 above ours, and I'm not saying that's the case. I'm guessing right now. We haven't talked about it. That, to me, is insane. That is an insanely difficult encounter without even mentioning slippery rocks.
What's your two hit?
Plus eight. Which I don't think you could have higher at this level.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking. I don't want to say because we're still in the middle of the combat what it is, but it's higher. But I'm also rolling 17 and up. every single time.
Right. But if but here's the problem is if we roll 17, we don't crit. And when you roll 17, you crit. And when we're at the level that we're at, this is resulting in one-shot kills. Like, you can't even act, and you're down already. That's my problem. If you're going to say it's a system problem, it might just be a Gatewalker's design problem. It might just be like they weren't, this creature needed to be 2 points lower, because then that natural 17 isn't a crit. It's just a, it's just a hit, you know? When you crit, it's like having, you know, a keen weapon or something like that. And I get that, like, oh, there's only one of them and five of us, but like, it's not a boss fight either. It's just supposed to be an, you know, a random encounter. So
it's brutal. And then you add in all the environment stuff, you know, which is funny because like I read it beforehand, I prep it, I'm like, okay, great. Acrobatics check if they take damage on there, reflex save to grab an edge. You got two chances to get swept down the river. It didn't even dawn on me till we got in, like getting knocked unconscious on the rock. My thought initially was like, okay, well, you're on acrobatic, nah, grab an edge, go in the water. But then I'm thinking to myself, like, if everybody either doesn't get that check or like gets that check at a penalty, everyone's just, they're all just going to drown and die if they go unconscious. And since this thing is meant to smash, that's not how it was intended. So we corrected it. And I don't know why that would be interpreted as an argument. We were really trying to figure out like, what is the best way to have this go down? And initially I'm reading it literally. It's like, if you take damage, you roll an acrobatics check, and then if you fail that, you roll to grab an edge. What I didn't think about is just falling unconscious and hitting the rock. You don't have to worry about slipping off the rock. You just fall on the fucking rock. And I think that was the right choice, because then, I mean, it'd be a TPK last episode easily. Mm-hmm. If everybody who went unconscious went in the water and started drowning, you die. So I liked the way we got there. And, you know, it never felt like an argument to me. It felt like we were trying to get to the root of like what's
going to
make
an argument to people. And I'm not, I think it's because you usually end up with these games, you end up in an area where you're not arguing about rules as written versus rules as interpreted as much as you're arguing about the collective and imaginated environment, right?
Sure.
Like you're arguing about like, well, how big is this rock? How pointed is this rock, right? Like if it's a sloped rock, it's just like this, you fall into the water. But the same rock on the same map could just be flat. And then you just fall and you don't fall in the water.
Yeah.
So that is always GM decision. Like GM.
For sure. And you wanted me to just roll the flat check. And I was just like, well, the reason I don't want to do that is, yes, it keeps the game moving. But I'm like, I think it's a I don't want to say the word lazy because it sounds like I'm calling you lazy. I think it's a lazy way of circumventing the fact that the real rule exists and we just can't find it right now. And so sometimes in lieu, and I think Jared does this a lot more, he just makes the call. And if it's wrong, you guys figure it out a few episodes later and it's really not a big deal. I'm just too OCD. There's a ruling here that's correct. And I just don't want to I just want to wait a second and see if we can figure it out. So let's have a discussion. And I initially ruled you fall in the water. And then I realized, oh, no. Okay. You fall on the rock and that's fine. What I didn't want to do is invent the rule of a flat check where I didn't feel like it called for that.
And I completely,
but I understand
like
where you were coming from.
Yeah. And I still stand by my call. This is what I would have done if I was GMing. I like the fall on the rock and not fall off. If you're going to do something else as opposed to automatically fall off, like that is way too brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that there's a chance that you don't, you know, fall off the rock. My issue was, well, you know what? Let's go into We Are Stupid, because I think that we can bring up what Professor Eric had to say about this. We can get it all out there, talk about it all. And there he is.
We are stupid.
Good buddy, Nick. Let's talk about this, because he did bring this up. He says, regarding the crit that dropped Asta and the ensuing unconscious acrobatics check, I'll agree that the rules as written versus rules as interpreted is very complex here. However, Troy was saying that the acrobatics check is happening simultaneously as she's hit. She's not quite unconscious yet. You know, Professor Eric seems to like this interpretation. There's nothing against the rules in that interpretation. We then decided that, you know, she was knocked out immediately, could not make an acrobatics check. And overall, Professor Eric's takeaway from it, because there is no rule here to just point out specifically, but his takeaway from it is It felt like everyone wanted to kill Asta and kept ignoring valid rule interpretations. It really felt like multiple people decided Asta was dead and any interpretation that didn't support that was wrong, which really felt like a backwards way to approach the rules. And I don't feel that way at all. Like, I'm not sure, but that is an honest, like, audience member interpretation of what was seen. But that is not what I was thinking in the least. Like, I definitely was not out to get Asta. I felt like we entered an area where the environment made the decision, not an ability of the character. Once her body became an unconscious object that just flopped to the ground, the flat check just simply represented how wet is the rock? How steep is the rock? Right?
Like, right.
Or you could not do a flat check. As a GM, you could say the rock is not very wet and not very steep. So you land perfectly.
Yeah. As written, you're not supposed to roll those checks until you take damage. That's why when you're hopping across the rocks, it's pretty easy. You don't have to even roll leap checks. As long as it's 10 feet, you just make that and you go across. I think maybe a perception check around there, like, what's going on with these rocks? Are they safe? I would then have told you, like, you know, they seem a little slippery. You certainly wouldn't want to get hit on that rock. But like that didn't happen. And so I didn't proffer that,
yeah. The reason that I pitched the flat check is because I think it's a good representation of something that your character does not control, but that is dealt with by the environment. But it also represents that, like, if you get hit unconscious and you just fall and land on the rock, well, why the hell did you need to roll acrobatics to just stay there when you get hit? Right? Like, why is it difficult? Why is it easier to stay on the rock when you're unconscious versus when you're conscious?
Right.
You know, that is my problem. There's a problem there with that. And obviously, you can always point out problems in hindsight about the interpretation. It is easier to stay on the rock unconscious than conscious, which didn't make any sense to me. That's why I said a flat check would be in order. And the flat check could literally, as a GM, you can set this to whatever you want. You know, 5 is going to be, you know, a routine, or 11, but you could be like, it's a DC 2 flat check. Just don't roll a natural 2 or a natural 1, and you stay on the rock because you know how deadly it's going to be if you fall off the rock. You know, the reason that I pitch those kind of things is because there is no rule for what happens when you get knocked unconscious on a slippery rock in the middle of a red river. Like, there can't be. It's too specific.
Right. So, so you revert to the actual rule. When you fall unconscious, you fall prone and drop what you're holding.
Yeah.
So that's what I ended up reverting.
But then you're prone in a place that might not be able to physically be large enough to hold your body. Mm-hmm. Or it is large enough to hold your body. You have to decide that. That's not a rule. That is the environment, the imaginated space in which we're playing. The shared imaginated. The shared space in which, you know, we're playing, because you can say you slip and fall on that rock and you just land just fine. And I'll take me out of it for a second. And Matthew could just as easily be like, wait a minute. I thought this rock was like 18 inches wide.
Yeah.
What do you mean I just fall? And you're like, no. It's like 4 feet wide. He's like, oh, okay. Like, we have to get on that same page. And that's
always
easily.
A tricky thing. It's always. Like when the GM has one imagination, it doesn't matter if the players see things differently. They'll figure it out eventually. But if the GM pictures something one way and the players picture it another, that disconnect can cause a lot of like dangerous problems. I don't think that was really happening here, but I've seen that happen before where it's like, no, wait a minute. I'm thinking back to like Giant Slayer, Iwiga fight, like those mounds that were in that room.
Mm-hmm.
You could climb. I can't remember what it was. It was like they were climbable, but they were still like stalagmites, and we couldn't wrap our head around it. Because I pictured it one way, you guys pictured it totally different, and that can cause problems.
And really, it does cause problems. And I think that the takeaway there, the main lesson is the GM's imagination of the scene is, oh dear.
See ya. Well, good talking to you, Joe.
Man, I was just about to get him too. I had talked him into a corner, and now I could. Oh boy!
All right, I'm back.
Oh, there he is. He's back.
You son of a bitch.
Sorry, we just had a video glitch there, audio audience. Anyway, the the takeaway here is this happens all the time, and there's nothing wrong with it. It happens all the time. Like, you're talking about collective imagination. How do you really know? So the first thing you have to do as a player is ask questions. Like, ask if you're unsure, be careful before you assume that a wall is exactly that high, or that the door is already open, or that, you know, don't make your actions based on assumptions. Think about, you know, what questions you might want to ask, and then realize that ultimately, you know, the GM interpretation is what's right in this case. So here's the example of this exact situation. I love hiking. I go hiking a lot in, you know, my regular life. I cross rocks over rivers all the time, and some are more dangerous than others, and they can get very, very slippery. You, on the other hand, not a big hiker. It's not your jam. You don't do a lot of this kind of outdoor kind of stuff.
I say mean things about it.
Exactly. If there is a rounded, some even somewhat rounded boulder that has water running over it that now for a little while hasn't, but has algae or it has water on it or whatever, my immediate interpretation is it is so slippery that if you are not completely focused on keeping your footing, you will fall. So that's going to be my interpretation of these rocks across this river. But then you tell me if you fall unconscious and you land on the rock, you just land there and that's fine. You don't fall off. I do not debate this, like, as a player. You don't debate it. The GM said what their imagination of the scenario is. Even if you feel that your real-life imagination of it could not possibly, like, it couldn't work that way, then, okay, perhaps you can do one rebuttal, right? Say, like, well, look, I mean, I think it would be really slippery. And if the GM's like, no, it's not, gotta let it go. Because ultimately, you're playing in the GM space. Just the GM space. Now, players can change it, and the GM can agree to change it 100%. But when there is a question of, like, you know, how slippery, how high, how wide, you just have, GM says it, just be like, okay, and then just go with that. And so, yeah, once you said there would be no flat check, they can just land there. That's fine. The thing that bothered me the most was this idea of unconscious reflex saves and unconscious acrobatics checks. You know, that's where I
know
was
that,
like,
bothers,
I can't wrap
you,
my head around it.
And it bothers me too, but it's as written that you do totally get it. And I'm sure there's a game balance reason for that. So we just have to emotionally get over it. But that wasn't, you know, a lot of times you spend hours prepping, and then once you get into the game, it's like all that preparation goes out the window because you see how the encounter actually plays out in real time. I wish that I had all the time in the world to run every encounter twice, like do a pre-encounter prep and be like, oh man, I realized so much. I can't play test every encounter and run a business. But I think that this happens a lot in your playing. You're like, oh man, this is going, I see now. And we even changed it mid thing. Cause I said, yeah, you drop in the water. Sorry. We'll have you wedge between those rocks. And that would have been fine too. But then as I realized, like, I don't think that was the intention of this thing. So yeah, I like the way we got there. You know, a lot of times too, just to talk more about, what you just said. Sorry, I just got hit with like 17 texts and emails. you have to go with the GM's imagination. This has happened to me before where it's like I go in prepped and I have a vision of something, and all the players at the table a couple minutes in the encounter see it a totally different way. And I'll look and I'll realize that you guys are right. And so at that point, one of two things has to happen. I have to concede, which I've done. I can't think of off the top of my head times that I've done that. I'll be like, oh,
I would,
you know,
like
what?
You to point me to you the guys episode right number where you said I'm wrong.
Yeah, I would never utter those words. That's a sign of weakness. Oh, you know what? You guys are right. I totally missed it. That's the wrong thing. Other times, I'll just kind of lean into my thing. And be like, well, I know you're right, but I've already planned this encounter a different way. So what you see on the map, that's actually a pole and not a climbable mountain.
That's a pole.
But it's tricky too, because you're one person prepping, right? And then you've got your vision of this, and sometimes you might miss something, or you have it in your head that this is the way it is. Then you display it to five other people and they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's a this. You'd be like, no, it's not.
Yeah. Oh man. Every game comes up against this. But in this case, it is very deadly to misinterpret. So things got really out of hand here. Let's go into a couple more small things. One thing to remember when you devise a stratagem, this is a big thing for Talith Master Flex. Hold on, I'm gonna show this on screen here. Boo, 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 boo. Here we go. Show you guys this. When we go to devise a stratagem on Demiplane, we've been on this before. You assess a foe's weakness in combat and then use that to formulate a plan of attack. Choose a creature you can see and roll a d20. If you strike the chosen creature later this round, you must use the result of the roll you made to devise a stratagem for your strike's attack roll instead of rolling. This was a point where Professor Eric brought up that Talitha, upon rolling, say, a natural 3 on a devised stratagem against the snail, could have turned and attacked a minion without any penalty and not used the natural 3. So can go and attack a different creature as that, instead of just being like, oh, well, all I could do now is move or do knowledge checks or whatever. That's not necessarily the case. Remember, you can pivot to another creature and you just have to roll your regular attack. You can't use your intelligence modifier as your attack roll. You'd have to use dex, I guess, in this case, if she's using an agile weapon. So, that was one good point. And then also there was some discussion online, this is from Professor Eric, that Talitha should be using the pursue a lead more often in exploration mode to be able to trigger a devise a stratagem as a free action. I agree with this.
I think she's
using it. I had to tell Matthew, like, you got to be using it all the time. When I played an investigator,
she's pursuing long-term leads, but that's not how it's intended.
Yeah, like, it can be both. You can have two. So you can have a long-term, but you can also keep... Now, in this case, Professor Eric points out, the rule is, quote, you spend 1 minute examining the details of one potential clue. That's the only rule for devise a stratagem. However... he said, even on a full investigation of the banks, there is no sign or tracks of the snail to clue you in. So in this particular encounter, it probably wouldn't have elevated to a free action, but it is definitely something to keep in mind for future reference for Talitha and all investigators out there. All right. So we did the dropping on the rocks rule. Okay. This is great. Now we're going to get into the fun stuff. God, I love this. God, I love this.
Yeah.
This is why... Professor Eric is a joy to have Professor Eric as part of the Glass Cannon Network. All right, get ready for this. On the critical hit on Talitha with the... I got to go ahead one. It is insane that Talitha should be permanently dead.
Yeah. How do we miss
that? How insane is that?
How do we... I don't know how...
How did we miss that?
I mean, I saw people talking about it. I'm not as well versed in the chat anymore, but like I saw people talking about it and then I saw it again. I was like, oh, I guess we must have missed it. And I don't know how. She rolled a nat 2 on a DC 12 recovery. Mm-hmm. And we just said, oh, you lucky son of a bitch. Wow.
We just said, like she said, fail. Natural 2. And I'm sitting right next to him and my stupid face is looking right at him. I'm just like, oh man, brutal. It's just getting worse and worse.
Honestly, like, I'm glad you brought it up because I thought maybe you knew and didn't say anything because that's classic O'Brien. You're just like, I don't want to say it. I don't want to be the guy. And I don't blame you.
I might not in that case. I might not actually say it. But in that case, I truly – look at me on video. I look like this. Like I'm just so – you can tell. I guess my mind is on something else or what. But I'm not even like looking seriously or I'm looking at
Matthew.
I still don't believe it.
It's just crazy.
I had to go back and watch it because people were saying it and I was just like, no, they clearly misunderstood something. Like I healed Talitha and da-da-da-da, whatever. And I go back and I watch and I watched it over and over again. And everybody around that table just like, yeah. I mean, talk about a rule that we know inside and out. Talk about a rule that every time that we have a DC 12 a recovery check, we're like, natural 1 or natural 2, permanent death.
Did we even say that beforehand? No, we didn't even bring
that one roll. We just didn't say it.
That's crazy.
That I can remember. We didn't say it.
It makes me sick.
It makes me sick. Now, I'm okay with it in this particular case because, you know, We got away with, I feel like we got away with a permadeath for a character, but we got away with it, in my opinion, for the most honest reasons ever. Like, truly, none of us caught. We just didn't catch it. And it wasn't because we didn't know the rule. It was like, somehow, it just flew under the radar. I can't explain it. And so in that way, I think it's fate.
Dude, it must be nice to just have a home game. Because this shit must happen all the time. And you don't have, like, 30,000 people being like, yo... they're dead.
Everyone
forgets
dead.
About it. So, I guess you get the old asterisk.
Perhaps she will be marked. But it is. It is brutal, and I can't believe it happened. But how about this? Let's make everybody feel a little bit better. Enter Professor Eric. On the critical hit on Talitha with the Lob Symbiote ability, It's the ability of this creature where it shot that shit out at us, and then it stays next to us as a minion. Now, he admits, quote, this is a very, very corner case, and it might possibly be an oversight by the author of the snail. Mm-hmm. However, as written, that attack is not a strike. This is important because it does not suffer the map. Is that correct? Were you not taking the map whenever you did a launch symbiote?
Well, it doesn't. The ability doesn't take the map, but it does say it's an attack. It just doesn't say strike.
Why doesn't it take the map? If it
that's has just the, part of this ability.
Part of the ability, it doesn't. Yeah,
yeah, it says, I don't want to read too much. This is a ranged attack that doesn't count toward the blah, blah, blah's multiple attack penalty. And its multiple attack penalty doesn't apply to this attack. So I think there's probably a case to be made that this isn't considered a strike, but there's easily a case to be made that's pretty obviously a strike.
It is not a strike. Hey, all you want to do is rules as written.
But like, it's pseudopod. It doesn't say strike. It just says pseudopod plus blah, blah. It's a melee attack. This is a ranged attack. It's it never says strike in the box of the enemy.
Well, does it say in the box of the enemy on its melee pseudopod thing, does it have a critical effect?
No.
No critical effect of any kind?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think any of these...
He knows this is a borderline case.
Sure. But this is the important rule to realize. It's listed as an attack... It's listed as a ranged attack roll, and so it's similar to all spells that must explicitly state what happens on different degrees of success. This one lists success, fail, and critical.
True.
So then he cites Player Core, page 401, quote, some actions and abilities have stronger effects on a critical success or failure. For example, a strike, capital S, deals double damage on a critical hit. Mm-hmm. If an effect doesn't list a critical success effect, the critical success effect is the same as the success effect. And the same goes for critical failures. So the fact that it is outside of the map rule is one possible indication that the intentional design was a decision to not make it a strike to avoid double damage on a crit when it's lobbed. So that would have been 15 damage against Talitha instead of 30, and she never would have been dying too.
Interesting. Interesting.
Very interesting, right? So then I am thinking, all right, let's go to this. By the way, we'll talk about this in a hot sack. Let's go.
That's really cool.
Isn't that cool?
That's in the GM core?
That's in the player core. Player core. Page 401. All right, now let's go to Brother Ramius's character sheet here. We know he's in a terrible situation. If we look under conditions,
that affects. I wonder if that was pre-remaster too. Like, if that's in the player core, is that little John like still true in the pre-remaster in which Gatewalkers was written? It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something they updated for the remaster or not. That's a good question to follow up on. But anyway, let's look at this Brother Ramius. This is what I look at when I play. This is my Brother Ramius of Latria character sheet.
These demiplane sheets, dude.
I know. So gorgeous.
So gorgeous.
Dude, look at my, like, the candles and the books and shit. Ah, it's Brother Ramius to a T. I love it. Anyway, I just gave myself one hit point back by accident. But, yeah. So current hit HP,
to,
like, 0.
Stop the show so you can fix that.
Dying 3, wounded 1. Looking bad. Well, Professor Eric writes this, and I'm like, yeah, but you know what? When I cast my Divine Lance, I don't, like, I just assume if I roll a natural 20, it doubles the damage, but I never actually looked, right? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't have degrees of success on here. It doesn't have a saving throw. So I open up Divine Lance. It's two actions, 60 feet, primary, 2d4, plus 8 to hit, and then right under there it says it, critical, 2d4 times 2. Spirit damage.
There it is.
So it did specifically say on the writing of the spell that it has a critical effect. It does double damage on it. So this is very interesting. If it doesn't
specifically... abilities that don't say they have a critical, it's the same thing as success. Yeah, so I want to dig deeper and see if that's a pre-remaster as well. But, I mean, I'd like to try and play it that way from now on. That's huge.
It's huge.
Well, it certainly makes that, Final Destination situation less... Harry there.
Totally. Exactly.
She shouldn't have done.
I think there is a reason out there that despite by Raw, Talitha should be permanently dead.
Yeah.
Also by Raw, pure Raw, maybe she never should have been dying in the first place. So there we go. I made my point. Or I should say Professor Eric made his point. I love you, Professor Eric. God, that is such a fun one. But no, that is good to know, like to make sure that you're not just assuming critical successes have extra added shit if they don't.
Very cool.
Real quick one on the psyche here. I'm not sure how many people, how many folks picked this up, but let's go into our psychic on Demiplane and look at the oscillating wave, which is what Buggles is. These are all the different abilities that he gets. The conservation of energy. We've talked about this before. Oh, sorry. Every time I hover over something, it's going nuts. So this is what Professor Eric points out. Remember that when he uses ignition, you can drastically increase the heat against blah, blah, blah. When using ignition as a range attract, increase the range to 60 feet. So that means that Skid has to remember once the once it is no longer amped and you his psyche is not unleashed, the range is not 60 feet anymore. I think Skid knows this. In fact, I think that, you know, in general, this is something that he pointed out because he just, you know, with us putting Foundry right up there, that there were a couple times where it seemed like maybe it was 5 feet out of reach or something. Technically, if you pause the episode and look at it, maybe the thing was 65 feet away. But it is important to remember that the range on those spells change versus when he's unleashed versus not unleashed, which I think is a really cool aspect of that class because increasing spell ranges is awesome. Because, like, how amazing would it be? Think about the situation that we were in with Brother Ramius right before the end there where, you know, he can reach out and he can heal Asta. But, like, he's too far away to heal much more of the group, you know, at this point because that range is 30 feet. That could be pretty punishing. It can be the difference between life and death. What if there was a way that a cleric can, quote, amp the range of their heal for an action or have something happen that allows them to do that? That's a really cool thing that the psychic has access to. All right, let's do a couple quick ones here for Zephyr. She dropped her stance in order to shoot outside her first range increment.
To me, this stance stuff.
This was a really big one. This is a really big one that she did. She used an action to do it. Professor Eric says, didn't have to. What were you thinking? What were you thinking, Kate? How many times in fodder have we had monastic archer stance?
I know.
Up?
Look at this thing. It's two paragraphs. Really shouldn't be as tricky as it is. And,
But here's the thing. You enter a specialized stance, blah, blah, blah. While in this stance, the only strikes you can make are using longbows, shortbows, or bows with the monk trait. We know this. You can use flurry of bows with these bows. We know this. You can use your other monk feats or monk abilities that normally require unarmed attacks with these bows when attacking within the first half range increment. This is what Kate took and read as you can only make attacks of this half the first range increment when you're in monastic archer stance. That's not the case. It's only saying when you're using monk feats or monk abilities such as flurry of blows, you have to be that close. You can stay in this stance and just shoot a bow.
Right, but you can't flurry of blows, for example, from that.
But you can't flurry of blows, exactly. Yeah. So it's a little thing, but it's also a big thing.
Oh, it's huge. Actions?
She wasted an action to go out of it and then had to go back into it. Yeah. Or I don't know if she did yet or whatever, but like, you know, if you want to go back into it, that's two actions completely wasted on a misreading of this paragraph, which I can see where the misreading comes from. It's not crazy to make that assumption. But if you legal read it a little bit, there's nothing that says you can't shoot it. You just can't use monk abilities with it. So that's going to be a huge upgrade for Zephyr. He pointed out something I think you might have done wrong with the creature. Let's see.
All right.
The snail can only have three chunks out at a time. It can't throw a fourth while three are out there.
Yeah, that was one of the two things that I changed in this encounter.
Oh, so that was a GM change.
Yeah, that was just a small change. It was like, I'm not going to take too much advantage of that. But I added that. And I added something else that we can talk about next week. But again, not
and super again, relevant. There's more to talk about this creature, this whole combat. I'm deliberately not getting into more because we have recorded past this and we want to kind of like let the whole combat play out before we dive into the mechanics of the creature and what could go right and could go wrong, et cetera. Could have gone right and wrong. One more rule thing. Zephyr, we asked this on air. Professor Eric confirms Zephyr can trip, shove, grapple, etc., all of it while in monastic archer stance. They are not strikes, and they are not blocked by being in the stance. So,
I was being a dick about trip. I think that I should encourage that more. You guys need to do more than just attack and miss. But I was trying to poo-poo it because I knew that there was no chance in hell you're going to trip this thing.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And it's, anything that's a size category larger than you with 50 legs, try something else. Like, that wasn't the time to try.
No, trip. I agree. But, I was trying to interpret outside of narrative and just on raw. Because if she rolled an athletics check and rolled a natural 20, it would be tripped. And in that case, it might have been better than hitting it with damage. I don't know.
Absolutely. Maybe
not on natural 20. But for it to have to suffer an action penalty would have been huge for us. But, it's more about, is there anything else we can do? Because just swinging away at it is not working.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are realizing the hard way, how important it is to try and get that AC down, to debuff in any way possible. Do you have a lot of debuff spells? Any debuff spells that are
No.
You're just healing focused and you've got a couple offensive spells.
Well, remember, we're second level. So third level is kind of a big jump because that's the first you get even a second level spell. We only have first level spells.
Yeah.
Here's a good debuff spell at first level. Fear. That's not really Brother Ramius. You know what I mean?
Against a creature that you don't know what its condition of its mind is.
So, right. I mean, how deadly these have been, I prepare every slot is heal except I prepare a bless. That's pretty much where I'm at right now because I only have three spells a day plus my healing font. So I have a bunch of extra heals, but I do two more heals in those slots because of how deadly, these encounters have been. And I really can't do much outside of that right now. If Brother Ramius, if he can live next week, and he can get stronger, I'm sure the cleric can have unbelievable spells. But right now, it's the early level caster shit,
I know we're still talking We Are Stupid, but what do you think about caps? I gave my opinion on it. I'm curious where you think. It seems like you enjoy it in Blood of the Wild. I think you understand my position on it. I don't even think you disagree with my reasoning behind it, but I'm curious what you think, cause I understand one of my roles as GM is to make sure everybody is having fun. Now I think that people have to at a certain point control their own enjoyment. You can't be I'm not having fun because you're making it unfun. Well, okay. I'll take some responsibility, but you have to choose to have fun, especially when you're getting paid. But I think that there is a problem in that, it seems like right now the equation for fun is lie about your roles and give out more bottle caps. That would be more fun. If I lied about I rolled down for one on my initiative. Oh, I missed. Damn it. And then just gave out a ton of caps. You guys would definitely be having a lot more fun. And it's not my fun versus your fun, because obviously that's not fun for me. But it's do you understand the problem here?
I do, but you've brought up several different things in that one. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So I think that my opinion is that in an effort to raise the stakes and make things tougher, stronger, more interesting, in an honest effort to do that, and the fact that you purely don't like these caps, you have created a situation that is not fun for the audience. Not as fun. Now, there might be some more bloodthirsty fans out there that really love it. That's great. But, you're talking about overall feels of people having trouble connecting with this. I think one of those things is how hard it has been. As our earlier YouTube comment pointed out, it's starting to just be not fun. It's so hard. And it's not just, I think it would be more fun if it was that hard and all of us as players were amazing about being happy with being miserable and being happy, being kind of cut off at the legs every encounter.
It's so crazy because it's not, I'm playing so soft.
That's not an attack on you.
This is, as I'm playing it, maybe the adventure is just naturally hard, but I'm playing it as loosely as possible.
But the adventure is built for hero points to be used multiple times every session. That's how the adventure is written.
Sure.
And if you don't want to run that kind of adventure because you want it to be grittier, that's fine. But you have to accept that multiple characters are going to die consistently throughout the campaign. It's not going to have the feel of a 1E campaign where characters can die, but they don't die every 10th episode, you know? But
for
like,
sure, for sure.
Yeah, I think that might be the primary.
I disagree that it's built for hero points, you know, because the guide specifically says you don't have to use them. It's as
the
close
guide
to
does, but that's not
it's as close to an optional rule as possible. And also, dude, I firmly believe that if you guys got a cap every session or a cap every few sessions, and everyone started saving themselves from death, the chorus would be right. Like constantly, because that's what would happen. The chorus would swing the other way. It's like, God, nobody ever dies. Because you always got a cap to save your ass. And I think that like...
Well, there's a middle ground.
There is, but it really takes you out of it, dude. It's like, it's almost like just, like I said, it's like how everybody else does it. Nobody ever dies in other campaigns because they're just not, they don't want to do that. It's a little more scripted.
Yeah, but like
I think that
but you also can't
the
have a
swing
show.
Of hero points is like you're just no one's ever going to die. But on top of that, everyone is constantly going to be saved by this magical cap, and that just takes out
you're missing out on. So that's the way that we think about it in your game because your game is so cap precious, so cap light. That like I would almost never turn a cap in for almost any die roll except to live.
Yeah.
Whereas in games where they're more liberal, like Blood of the Wild, I'll turn a bottle cap in to get better on a diplomacy check I just did because I think it's going to move the story in a way that I think is more interesting. And so I'll get a second roll at it with that.
Yeah.
Then I don't have my cap. And it has happened where like you're about to die and you're like, I can't believe that earlier today I used the cap for that reason, blah, blah, blah. Like there are still really fun decisions out there and people absolutely can die. And there's a middle ground. There's absolutely a middle ground. I also think even for a caps light campaign, you definitely don't give enough caps. And I think that you know that. I think that you forget to give caps sometimes.
I do.
And then you look back, you're like, nah, I could have given a cap for that. And then
I also think play has been pretty uninspired.
But now you can't go back.
Yeah, no, I definitely could give them more caps. What I don't want to be is like, oh, you all showed up to the session today. Here you go. Bare minimum. You know, it's fine.
I just think, though, caps, I think there's
moments. I just hate them. And if they are a necessary part of the system, then there might be a part of me that just really doesn't like the core of the system. That if it's built that you have to have these in order to have a campaign where people don't die every 20 episodes, at the end of the day, this might not be the best system for us to do this show.
I mean, maybe. I'm not going to necessarily debate against that. But what I am going to say is like, I think that you're just thinking of it incorrectly. Like the same mechanic exists in other games. It just goes by a different, it doesn't feel maybe as much of a Deus Ex
Machina. What is it called in Pathfinder First Edition? Doesn't exist.
No, because dying was very different. Like the dying mechanics were very different in Pathfinder First Edition. You know, it was pretty hard to go completely negative zero, you know, more than your con in that game system. And, God, there's so many other things that interact with each other in 1E. But I'm talking about like a Blades in the Dark, for example. Like in a Blades in the Dark, like people don't die. Like it's extremely rare for people to actually die because you can just undo any harm that comes your way by spending stress, but it is a limited resource. At a certain point, you run out of it, you will die. It's the same thing with this. It's a limited resource. You use it again. You use it to come back up. And in a combat like this, like you can go back down again and be dead. And you still had that hero point. So it's not that people will never die. It's just that they won't die in a random encounter, like all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Those are cool too.
But I also think that, like, I don't disagree that, like, getting one for showing up is the way to play. Like, that's not what I'm saying either. I just like the idea of giving people bottle caps to incentive any time they're putting any extra effort into the narrative, their character, or thinking about somebody else's character or whatever, just incentivizing fun play around the table, I think is more caps should go out and more caps should be spent.
You know? Yeah, well, it's that those go hand in hand, right? If I'm giving out more caps, people spend them more. If I'm not giving them out, people are a lot more precious with them. I think that, you know, I don't think anything about what you're saying is wrong. And I realize that I'm being pretty close-minded about it, but I just know how I feel. I feel like whenever someone does that to save themselves from death, it's lame. And that just doesn't go away, even though I get it and I don't want people dying constantly. I'm having trouble marrying those two problems in my mind. And I don't think the solution is just more caps. But I don't know what the solution is yet. We'll figure it out.
But here's the other question. You know, what kind of story do you want to write? Do you want to write a story where death matters and where characters, when they die, it's a big deal? Or do you want to write a story where a main character dies every 8 weeks? I mean, that is not good either. And that's the story you feels like you're writing right now.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, that's why.
And so you don't want to take your foot off the gas. You don't want to fudge the creature's AC down to
a
point.
I mean, I'm taking my foot off the gas big time.
I know, but and you don't want to. Doesn't that feel gross too? Like,
it does.
If you just have the hero points out there, you don't have to do that. And you can just be like, you had used your hero point. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, there might be – I think you might be onto something there. There might be a solution within there. You know, it's tough that we have to record these in advance because one thing I would do is like have the – create some more interaction between the fans, like have the fans vote on like player of the game and then you get a cap for next week's episode. But it doesn't work because we have to record these in advance. You wouldn't get that cap until like later.
It doesn't
matter.
And
that's fine to be like – you know, if we record, it's like, well, it just so happens that we're recording episode 45. It's like, for episode 39, Kate was the star. You get a cap. You know, maybe I could do something like that. But I don't know.
I tell you what, no one would be mad about it.
Yeah, no, of course, of course. any reason to get caps.
Well, the thing is, we don't necessarily have to announce it. Well, Nick has started doing something on Legacy that I really like.
Nick Lowe?
Nick Lowe, yeah. He has started – we don't have physical caps, obviously, because that's a virtual game. And that's 1E. And those just get handed out for great role play or, you know, Nick writing a song or whatever it is. Nick has started, instead of having the physical things, he just has a spreadsheet of those caps and what they were for.
Oh,
and then
cool.
He checks them off when they're used. So that way, when you say, I'm going to use this cap, you know exactly like what you got it for. It might be interesting to have a list. It's like, all right, I'm going to turn this cap in. You're like, oh, this is your episode 24 player of the game cap as voted by the nation. So we don't have to announce it before the show, but you can announce it at whatever time it ends up getting used, which means you don't really know when they got it, when it's recorded, when, you know.
You have an ongoing sheet and it's just like it self-populates.
Yeah.
You know? McD just updates it once a week.
It's like, and then you just check it off when it's used.
Yeah,
you know, like,
that's interesting. Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. It's a
real. Dude, you call them fan caps. Like, there are Troy caps. They're very stingy, very hard to get. Fans could just give out caps, you know, willy nilly. And we just have to have a
and
structure.
They're not as powerful. They can't say this is back.
They're not as powerful.
They're really just decorative.
I like it. I like
don't
it.
Know. I think that I get it. I get it. It's just, it rubs me the wrong way. There's got to be a solution in there. I'm excited to find it.
Let's get in a quick listener mail before we get out of here. We ran super long, but I gotta kick it to the Nace for at least
a second. It's a big fod.
It's a big fod. It's a monster fod.
Monster fod, dude.
It's time for listener mail. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time for listener mail. Gotta cue that.
You know what we didn't even mention? That episode 1 of season 6 of Get in the Trunk is in the can. That we recorded it. It's done.
That's
it's
wild, man.
Printed. Get excited, Nash. Season 6 is underway in the background. We'll let you know when we have more info on that. All right, let's go to Henry in Lancashire in England. Lancashire, England, another
Lancashire.
International edition. Wow, I don't know why I got burpy all of a sudden. What's up, Henry?
Gross.
Thanks so much for writing in. Hey, Joe and Troy, I've been a fan of you guys since the Pathfinder 2E playtest session you released with Jason and Eric. Funny enough, you mentioned that earlier in this episode.
That is funny.
When you played through Quest of the Everflame, which got me back into tabletop RPGs, and now I'm running two weekly games, Pathfinder and Call of Cthulhu.
That's cool.
That's awesome. Awesome. A couple of quick questions. So I'll go to the other one first, which is, have you guys in Blood of the Wild figured out that you're nerfing Paula's Dispel Magic ability? Yes, for everybody that cares about Blood of the Wild, we have figured that out, by the way. I can tell you about that off air. But basically, we just we're considering hazard levels to be the same as spell rank, and that's just not the case. Hazards get halved before you apply Dispel Magic to them. So we've learned that. We know that now. We're way ahead in terms of recording on Blood of the Wild, so fear not. You might hear that mistake a few more times, but we know about it now.
Must be nice to be ahead.
Oh, man, it's so nice. I'm recording Blood of the Wild right after this. So, yeah, we are we that train just does not stop. We play every week. All right, let's get to the main question here. This is a good one. After getting back into this courtesy of the Pathfinder 2E playtest session with Jason and Eric, I'm attending my first ever gaming convention next month. Any tips for a noob? So what would you say to somebody that's going to their first, we don't even know what the gaming convention is, probably something in England, but what are some things that you know think about when you go to your first gaming convention?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting and it's nerve inducing. If you're going alone, that's even trickier. Like, as I did that, my first PaizoCon, I was alone. I didn't know anyone really to speak of, except Mona, and we weren't as close as we are now. You know, I think it's good to just like sign up for some things, because you'll find that if it has the ability to like pre-sign up for things, you'll find that if you go there and just start wandering around, you wish you signed up for things. You're like, I'll find something to do there. And then you get there and you just be overwhelmed. You don't even know where to start.
And you'll also be locked out of a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So if they do pre-sign ups, you know, especially like with Gen Con coming up, like we always say, like pre-sign up for things because they sell out, and then you get there and you got nothing to do. So sign up for things. Don't block out your day so you're going from one thing to the other, to the other, to the other. It's too much. Make sure you have lots of time in between. And, you know, walk around and do demos. If it's the type of con that offers demos, you and I, back in the day, we used to love doing that. We still try to squeeze a demo into a con here and there when we're not rushing around like idiots. But and get some time away from the con. That's just as important, because you walk away, leave there to go get lunch. Don't eat the garbage food at the con.
Yeah, don't eat garbage food at the con.
I think
that's
pops.
Another thing is stamina is really important. Don't eat junk. Bring water and bring like – I used to pack like granola bars and shit in my backpack, like, you know, an apple, you know, like you have something that you can eat on the move if you need to, because sometimes you're going to sit down, you're going to find yourself, maybe it's not something you signed up for, you might find yourself sitting down in a 2-hour demo and you might be like, I'm starving. That could take you out of a game. It could make you not enjoy yourself as much. Have some food on you as if you're like hiking or something where you want to have, you know, be able to have a quick snack. Stay hydrated, stay clean, make sure that wash your hands, use plenty of deodorant. It gets sweaty in there. So those are all kind of major things. It can be very, very overwhelming. You can't do everything. It's like going to a museum. You can't like see it all on the first time you go. And if you expect to, you're going to probably have a worse time of it. Pick a couple things, really focus on those things. Game demos, you know, and, you know, I don't know about panels. I don't know if you're interested in panels, but like those can eat up a lot of your time too. I would say pick one, pick two for the whole weekend or day. If it's a day, you just do one. Don't do more than one.
Panels can be good.
Panels can be great, but then you can get lost in them too and be like, I never got a game done. I didn't actually play any games. I just saw people talking about games.
Right.
Game demos are the best. I always go for like, try to find the most indie-ish sort of section where there are people that are developing their own things, and the people that made it themselves are there. Like, it's great to just talk to people about a game they made. You can really see the passion rather than, you know, waiting in an hour and a half line for the next Pokemon thing or the next... you know, I don't know whether it's, you know, collectible cards or if it's a video game convention, you know, the next big Sony, PlayStation, whatever, like you're going to wait 2 hours for this VR experience or whatever. Like, don't do that. Don't wait in long lines for that crap, because like it just ends up not being worth it. Talk to game designers. Take that opportunity, which is really, really fun. And then, sign up for some, you know, RPGs if you want. You can play some D&D or Pathfinder. Or board games, you know, if you can sign up for board games, anything like Gen Con, That's really fun to sign up just for a 2-hour slot. But yeah, make sure you bake in time to get out of the con as well. So
I'll never forget our first Gen Con just being like, it was such a fucking whirlwind. I felt like I've just moved to New York. Like everything up was down, down was up, just so overwhelmed. And we did so much stuff. But you always have that feeling like, I want to do more. And at one point, never really a voice of reason, you turned to me and you were like, dude, it's just our first Gen Con. I was like, so true. I never thought that we would come back every single year since.
So I told you I cleaned out my attic. We got giveaways coming on the streams this week. Look what I found in my attic. Just I have this right in my drawer because I just found this yesterday. My Gen Con 50, Joe O'Brien. The Glass Cannon Podcast press badge.
That's so funny. I take pride in throwing that stuff out.
I found it in a box upstairs. I love keeping it. It's my first Gen Con.
I know. I keep so much stuff. Like, it is a relief to be like, goodbye. You don't bring me joy.
That's great. Your children will thank you when they clean out your house when you die. I'll say that much.
Why did he buy so many baseball cards during COVID?
Oh, man, you got into that. All right. Thank you again, Henry. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this like chunk-tacular FOD.
Yeah, good
fun. I hope some of that news sunk in. I hope you guys appreciate some of our honest feedback and analysis of Gatewalkers thus far. And, you know, as we continue deeper into this campaign, this fight's not over. It continues next week. We'll see what happens and we'll talk about it more on next week's FOD. Until then, lots of streams to watch, lots of YouTube premieres to watch. Keep following the socials and look out for those schedules and stuff. All right. Take
and
it easy.
Enter the gauntlet.
Enter the glass cannon gauntlet. We'll see you next time, everybody. Take it easy. Bye.
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com.
Welcome to a journey into the heart of the Texas Renaissance Festival, the nation's largest and rowdiest celebration of medieval fantasy. But what lurks beneath the facade of tights and turkey legs? Well, we dove deep into the empire to uncover a history marred by mystery and misconduct, murders, assaults, and other crimes that tarnish its legacy. This isn't just a fairy tale. It's a cautionary tale of power, fantasy, and the consequences that follow when they all collide. Search for Crime Waves Renaissance Texas on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now.
On a summer night, Douglas Wagg Jr. lay motionless across a strip of railroad tracks before being struck by an oncoming train. I'm investigative journalist Delia D'Ambra, and my investigation into exactly how Doug died took me into the depths of a bizarre mystery.
It was really hard to understand what was fact and what wasn't.
A mystery that has led me from one suspicious death to another. Listen to Counterclock now, wherever you listen to podcasts.